Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me today, we have two very special guests, and they're both from NYCHA. The first one is Lisa Bova Hyatt. She is the CEO of the New York City Housing Authority. She was appointed July 6, 2023. She served as interim CEO for the authority since September 2022. Lisa has more than 25 years of experience in public sector. She joined NYCHA in February 2020 as general counsel, where she led the authority's law department and was involved with all NYCHA executives' matters, including compliance with HUD agreements, NYCHA's transformation in the implementation plans, as well as operations and administration. Jamie Rubin is our second guest. He's the chairman of the NYCHA board with more than three decades of experience working on affordable housing, disaster recovery, major infrastructure projects, and clean energy in public, private, and nonprofit sectors. He's currently the chief investment officer of Align Climate Capital, investing in low carbon economy nationally, and previously worked as CEO of Miriam NA, investing in the developing transformation infrastructure projects, including LaGuardia Airport, Terminal B, Miami Beach, Monorail, and DC Metro Purple Lines, which I'm all experienced with because I've been to all three of those places. I noticed that both of your careers are intertwined because you both work for the state, I would assume, at the same time. So you know each other very well, and you work together on various projects.
True story.
Welcome to Reaching Out. I'm glad to have the two of you here. Thank you.
We're very happy to be here.
Okay. Before we get into the questions, can you tell us about your working relationships, both of you? Together, your partnership.
Lisa?
Sure, absolutely. Jamie and I have had the good fortune of working together, both first at the Governor's Office of Storm Recovery, where I started as the general counsel and Jamie was the executive director. And then when Jamie was elevated to become the commissioner of Homes and Community Renewal, I stepped in as the executive director. Storm recovery is all about helping communities recover after an extreme weather event. So it's really fitting that I would be in the CEO role and Jamie would come on as our board chair, because a lot of the issues that NYCHA is going through now are very similar to a crisis, right? We have a tremendous lack of federal disinvestment over decades and decades, and really meeting people where they are and focusing on communities. As you know, NYCHA is spread out geographically across the city of New York. We have developments in the most affluent neighborhoods of New York City, like Fulton, Elliott, Chelsea. We have high rises and low rises. We have developments in areas that are transportation deserts, like Mariners Harbor in Staten Island. So it's really a full circle moment, I think, for Jamie and I to be working together again on this very, very important mission.
I agree. And the only thing I'd add is that I think it's, you know, one of the other things that prepares, I think, both of us, more Lisa, in this context, because Lisa is the day-to-day head of the agency. Obviously, I mean, my involvement is much more of a part-time board member, although it takes plenty of time. But, you know, when we were both of us at the Storm Recovery Office for a cumulative of about 4 years, probably or more, after Hurricane Sandy, the scope of the devastation, particularly across Long Island and Staten Island and parts of Manhattan and Brooklyn, was intense. There were, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, as well as people upstate, who were impacted, and they were impatient to get help. We designed programs that that put a lot of the emphasis on community engagement as we programmed out that $5 billion and spent an enormous amount of time in those communities working with the people that lived there, because our view was they were the ones who knew best what they needed. So both Lisa and I have a lot of experience on the ground working with people to come up with, to understand what they thought was right, the right role for government and government funding. And I think that's translated really well into the work at NYCHA, where the residents really are the first point of our emphasis.
Now, prior to Hurricane Sandy, the area of Far Rockaway was just like, it was just what it was, Far Rockaway. But now you go out there and you see homes. I think I'm in Long Beach, California. I see surfing. They're selling surfboards. They have surfing lessons. I said, when did California come to Far Rockaway?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It's a great, you know, to be candid with you, I didn't have a ton of experience out in Far Rockaway myself before we had to go out there for Sandy. And, you know, it's a solid 2 hours away sometimes, because it's kind of a transit desert, which is a problem. But it's an extraordinary piece of real estate. You know, it's beautiful out there. You know that.
Yes, sure. You have the beach. And like I said, it looks just like Long Beach now.
Yeah, I mean, open land in New York City gets discovered by developers one way or the other.
Now, traditionally, NYCHA has been run by a chairperson and CEO, but that seems to have changed over time. Can you tell us, can you both tell us when it changed and why, and what are the benefits?
Sure. The change came about through the transformation plan, which was written as a requirement under the 2019 HUD agreement. And it really is in line with well-run government and non-government agencies who separate the day-to-day operations from board governance. You know, before I came to NYCHA, I knew of no other organization where the board chair and the CEO were one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and it's, you know, I've more of my experience has been private sector than public sector. And it is definitely the case in the private sector that good governance calls for having a separated CEO and chair roles. It's, you know, the board is supposed to oversee the work of the management team, whatever context that's in, on behalf of the people that they work for, which in our case, obviously, is the residents and the workholders, and then, of course, the communities that they live in. For whatever reason, a long time it had been the CEO and the chairperson were the same person. Part of the consent decree that the agency entered into dictated that those roles would be split. We still have a 7-person board. Three of those board members are required to be tenants, which is great. They obviously bring a perspective on the work that none of us can bring. And then the other three are folks who are supposed to add value and bring special skills. And I think we have three terrific other members. And then as the chair, you know, I serve as the point person on the board. As I said, I'm not the day-to-day manager, but Lisa and I and her team work very closely together.
Good, good, good. Listen, who are the, I don't want to say the tenant board members, because I wouldn't leave them out of the equation at the moment, but who are the other board members?
So Lisa Galvin, Lisa predated my time. Lisa,
not Lisa.
Hyatt.
Paula Gavin.
I'm sorry. I've got Lisa on the mind. Yeah, Paula Gavin, whose background I don't really remember. I know she's city government, I think.
Yes, and she's been on the board, you know, a very interested member of our board for quite some time. She predates me taking over as a CEO and even as the general counsel.
Yeah, and very dedicated to NYCHA and its success. Joan Talley is a longtime public servant and public finance executive. She was at the city's HDC for a long time. She was at Morgan Stanley doing affordable housing work. She just had left Morgan Stanley. This is sort of her, you know, she's going back into public service to some extent. She's a friend of mine, and she is one of the city's most respected housing finance professionals and has added tremendous value to the board. She came on last year. And then the third, the fourth other non-resident board member is Greg Belenfanti. Greg, again, is somebody I've known for a long time. He is a private equity professional. He's the president of a firm called One Equity Partners. And Greg is on the board of LISC, the Low Income Service Corporation, and has had a lot of interest and exposure to community development, finance organization, institutions, and affordable housing, and is a finance guy as well.
Nitra, how many developments do you currently have? And in those developments, how many employees do you currently have?
So we have over 335 developments. Of course, some of them we've been transferring through the PACT program and will be transferred through the trust program. But with our remaining properties, we have over 12,000 employees, close to 12,500 employees. And of that total number, 8,000 of those employees are Teamsters. And so when you think about it, the Teamsters are really the backbone of NYCHA. And as you know, but I can go through all of our caretakers, housing assistants, resident building superintendents, housing managers, exterminators, housing stock workers, our HPTs, our housing plan technicians, our chief caretakers, our supervisor of housing stock workers, just to name a few. But these are really our frontline workers who are representing NYCHA day in and day out, and making us a far stronger and resilient organization.
Now you mentioned the trust. Now, for those who are listening, they say, what is a trust? So,
sure.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've heard, or what we had heard over the years, people were very nervous about transferring developments from traditional Section 9 to the Section 8 program through RAD, what we call a New York PACT, which stands for Permanent Affordability Commitment Together. And so what we heard was that people thought it was the privatization of public housing. So we really took that to heart and we said, maybe we can come up with another way to achieve the same results, which is transferring the properties to project-based Section 8, which has a far more rich subsidy from HUD, but keep it public. So we petitioned the state legislature, and in 2022, the governor signed into law the New York City Housing Preservation Trust. And what it does is it converts properties from Section 9 to Section 8. However, after the rehabilitation of the properties has gone through, NYCHA workers remain on staff to handle the day-to-day maintenance. It is not transferred to private management. So we're really, really excited about the trust program. We'll have properties converting into the trust in 2026. We have a tremendous amount of resident engagement. We hold votes at the site to make sure that tenants know the difference between the three different options, remaining as Section 9, transferring to Section 8 through the PACT program, and transferring to Section 8 through the trust.
And Jamie?
I also sit on the trust board as its chair.
Yeah, I mean, that's the trust. I mean, Lisa did a great job of explaining it. It's fairly complicated. It is an alternative to the PACT, or frankly, to staying Section 9 and doing nothing. You know, we have our own views about the relative importance of going in some other direction than simply staying Section 9 for properties that really need capital. And we can talk about that. But it's been a very successful pilot for us, I think.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters, with us very special guest, Lisa Boyd Hyatt, and also Jamie Rubin, NYCHA. We have elections, we have new administrations and the federal government. We're going to have a new administration here in the city. That presents a whole different set of challenges that you will have to face. So what are the challenges?
Latest challenge is that we are seeing the acceleration of the impact of the age and the lack of investment throughout our portfolio. You know, over the last few years, we had to relocate an entire senior building in the Bronx because we were not confident that we could provide heat through the entirety of the heating season. On the Lower East Side, we had residents in first houses who were relocated due to roofs that were in danger of collapse. And, you know, I can turn it over to Jamie to talk about our capital needs assessment, but we need approximately $80 billion in capital investment to bring our buildings up to a state of good repair.
Yeah,
and the federal shutdown does not help that.
Does not help. I look, Lisa said it exactly right. The last, we every several years, we do something called a physical needs assessment. It's an official review that we hire outside firms to do, engineering firms to do, on a building by building basis, and tell us what would it cost if we had all the money today and could spend it all today. We don't have either of those things. What it would cost to get our entire, all of our buildings up to a state of good repair. And the number is $80 billion. The amazing thing is, that about 10 or 12 years ago, it was at something like $17 billion. We've had inflation since then. And despite the fact that we've put about $13 billion into the building since then, between inflation and just the accelerating process of disintegrating, you know, systems and buildings and all that, it is at 80. The good news, and if it's good news, is that it's still at 80, even though last year we had another look at it and it was at 80. That the fact that it isn't growing is actually a big victory and says a lot about the good work that the team here has done. But it is a huge problem. And unfortunately, although there periodically, you know, there are some people raise hopes that we're going to get $40 billion from the federal government, I'm really not convinced that's ever going to happen. There certainly hasn't been any evidence of it. So we have to pursue every other means we can. As Lisa said, the big, what we really need to not have happen ever is for a building to have to be vacated, you know, hopefully before anything bad happens. We have too many residents and too many of your men and women whose lives would be at risk to have that even be a risk.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, our oldest building, First Houses, is going to celebrate its 90th anniversary in December. So we have buildings, and it's not like, you know, people have consistently lived in our buildings for 90 years. I think the average age of our buildings is about 65 years, although we have some that are much older and some that were built more recently. But when you think about the capital repair cycles that have been missed over the years, we have pipe issues, boilers, roofs, infrastructure, elevators. And so when you think about the capital needs building by building, it's astronomical, especially when you have very large campuses. One of the other things that I think people don't necessarily realize is that the typology of NYCHA's buildings are very diverse. We have huge campuses. You know, I think our largest campus is 40 acres, which is sort of extraordinary. We have brownstones, we have low rises, we have 40 story buildings with elevators, we have walk-ups. So we really don't have a one size fits all approach to how to make sure that our much needed affordable housing, you know, is there for generations to come of New Yorkers.
I don't know that people really appreciate the size and scale of NYCHA. I think everybody, you know, it turns out everybody from New York, and maybe, but I didn't realize this until I took on this role to some extent, but every time you tell people that you're involved with New York City Housing Authority, it doesn't matter where they're from in the country, they know NYCHA. You know, it's a third of all the public housing in this country. There is no second place in terms of size. It's everything else is peanuts. And you know, it's in every borough. If you look at a map of where all these crazy buildings are that Lisa just talked about, they're everywhere. We have, you know, somewhere between, I don't know, 500,000 and 600,000 tenants. We don't really know the exact number because it's a shifting landscape. And it's 172,000 separate units. You know, I watched some of the debate last night, as I'm sure you did, Greg. And at one point, Curtis Sliwa, the Republican candidate, said something about NYCHA having 6,000 vacancies, and that was going to be some part of the solution to the housing crisis. 6,000 units is, let's see, it would be 0.03% of all of our apartments. So that's like a big nothing in the scale of NYCHA. And the reason we have 6,000 vacancies, frankly, is because you have to have a few vacancies to move people in and out of if you need a place to put someone. And then the rest of them are probably just being fixed up. So we don't really have vacancies in this massive system. We're full up, despite the size of it. You know, NYCHA is kind of the pillar of New York's affordable housing, and doesn't really get recognized as that.
We made the commitment a couple of years ago that every time an apartment was going to be turned over, we would go in and make sure it was environmentally safe. So that's remediating lead, checking for asbestos, and making sure that it's mold safe.
I think what Curtis Lee was referencing, I'm not him and I'm not speaking for him.
That's okay.
There was a report that
Yeah.
was created by the comptroller at the time, Scott Stringer.
Yep.
And there was the allegations of NYCHA warehousing buildings, but that report was at least 10 to 12 years ago. So those figures don't
Right.
correspond to today. So I believe if you're not familiar with NYCHA, you remember the report from 12 years ago. You can't make 12 years ago now because things have changed, and that's what I think he was doing at the time. You had a lot of vacancies. You needed to have places repaired, and our suggestion was, why don't you, instead of having sending families to the hotels for $4,000, $5,000 a month, rehab the apartments in NYCHA and send the families to NYCHA. This way they have permanent residence, and then you could pay a fraction of that rent toward NYCHA
Right.
and help NYCHA. But that never got off the ground because,
Yeah.
yeah, and
No, I
that's
got it. Yeah, and you're
probably
right.
the
It's a long time
families
ago.
first.
Now,
Yeah.
you're right. It's a long time ago. But you know, the
Yeah.
fact is, first of all, it's not many. We don't have many vacancies, and as Lisa said, they really aren't real vacancies.
Right.
You know, the fact is, what we have in this city is we've got a housing crisis, and you know, the worst thing that would happen to the city is for NYCHA not to be given the resources that it needs to rebuild the buildings and have folks who live in NYCHA start, you know, pouring into the limited amount of affordable housing we have and exacerbate what is already a terrible crisis, which is, by the way, you know, the ballot questions that are coming out in November are, I think, a critical piece of solving that crisis. You know, the work that this mayor and other mayors, frankly, have done, this mayor, you know, for whatever you may think of him, has been a very good housing mayor, has supported NYCHA. The mayoral candidates now have also, they support NYCHA, or I know two of them have at least. You know, if NYCHA isn't safe and sound, and Lisa's team isn't given the resources that they need to keep NYCHA going, you know, the Teamsters have a problem, and our residents have a problem, and the city of New York has a problem.
Yeah, because you think you have a housing crisis now, you put 600,000 people out in the street, and then you have a
Man,
catastrophe. So,
yeah, that's for sure.
yeah, so you make your problem worse.
Yep, that is correct.
100%.
Any last words? Because we have 1 minute left.
NYCHA houses 1 in 15 New Yorkers, and we need to make sure that it stays that way.
I couldn't agree more. As long as we have a great management team and Lisa and her team, and as long as we have great workers like the Teamsters, we'll be okay. We have to provide them with resources.
Thank you. Thank you both. My very special guests to Lisa Bova Hyatt and also Jamie Rubin, New York City Housing Authority leadership. Thank you very much for coming on together, reaching out. I know our listeners will be well served by listening to this program. Thank you.
Thank you
Thank
so
you so much
much.
for having us.
You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters, very special guest I just mentioned. And we thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.